Thank you, Alex. And hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Wald. And thank you so much for tuning in again to Ask the Blood Detective. This is part two of Autism Epidemic, where I'll discuss some very disturbing but also very hopeful approaches to help to managing and preventing autism and the autism spectrum disorders. I encourage you to visit my blog at www.intmedny.com, or you can Google me, drmichaelwald.com, or thebloodetective.com. Look at the blog, and you can listen to the show over and over and over again. Please send me your comments and show topics for future shows, which I'll provide on this station every Wednesday at 2 o'clock. So I want to continue with the discussion that I started last week regarding the various causes of ASDs, as they're called. And I ended the last show by speaking about prenatal complications. I want to speak about some of the maternally inherited genetic variants which seem to be present in autism spectrum disorders, which do involve or are linked with the intellectual disability patients in particular. I just want to name what the gene is called, and it's called the CADPS2 gene. But, you know, there's lots of genes and stuff that we'll speak about and you'll hear about in the news, but at the end of the day, genes express based upon environment. That means what we eat, what we're thinking, and various other environmental factors that have to do with how genes express. And by express, I mean how the environment, like what you eat, what your children eat with ASDs, what nutrients they take, that if they are not quite what they need, these genetic glitches rear their ugly heads, and then we have the symptoms and issues associated with ASDs. And we described during the last show that the three core symptoms, there are many, many other comorbid conditions, but the three core symptoms of autism spectrum disorders include impaired social interactions, of course, stereotype repetitive behaviors, and communication deficits. Now, genetics, I'm telling you, I promise you, there will not be a single gene associated with ASDs overall. Instead, there'll be a multiple gene sort of influence, meaning there are a lot of genes that they're not broken per se, they're not defective, they're not known by geneticists or considered by geneticists as inborn errors of metabolism. Those are serious. But they're just genes that don't quite work well. When you put a bunch of genes together that don't work quite well, they call that a plurigenetic effect. And that, I believe, I personally predict, is the issue. And what is so beautiful about the holistic and integrated, or the blood detective approach, as I call it, to dealing with children with ASDs, is that it attempts to find the issues and manage them as naturally as possible so that genetic glitches are tamed a bit. And there's lots of evidence for this. Every single concept that I speak about, you should know, is evidence-based, meaning there's one or many, many more, either dozens or even hundreds of studies located on the national databases of medical records, like PubMed.com and the Cochrane databases, where all doctors go for evidence. So I didn't make this stuff up. What I did make up is how to integrate it in a way that works for children. So we have these weak genes which have environmental triggers such as foods or radiation and other many, many other triggers which we'll list during this and other shows. So stay tuned for that. But not all these gene effects, even when they are present, will account for all the symptoms. And then you'll have a child that has these ASD symptoms and no genetic effects are found. Some of these other genes, by the way, are the MTHFR gene. I check that on every patient because it has to do with methylation. Methylation is a healing process everywhere, and a healing process, a reparative gene glitch that I find on many people, which means they will have impaired DNA health. So impairments in DNA, and when DNA or genetic material does not repair, that is a defect. You know, Fragile X, that other ASD, is an example. But we know that GABA, a natural supplement, GABA aminobutyric acid and various antioxidants, can ameliorate and manage many, many of the Fragile X issues for many years. Extremely important nutrient. But then there are also environmental chemical exposures that can turn on these genes that we need to be aware of, or just cause brain damage, because that's really what these ASCs are. So a few examples of these environmental chemical exposures include stress, whether it's psychological or physical stress, smoking or second stream smoke that these children are exposed to, or just pollution. There's alcohol, sugar, caffeine, saturated and trans fats, gluten, GMOs or genetically modified foods. And for those of you who have not read my book, Frankenfoods, which is my GMO book, Frankenfoods, Controversies, Lies, and Your Health, you can take a look at that on Amazon.com or go right to the Blood Detective website under books and you can read some excerpts there. But I want to start with one of these pesticides. This pesticide is called glufosinate ammonium, or GLA for short, and it's one of the most widely used herbicides in agriculture in the United States. And as in the case for most pesticides, potential adverse effects of GLA, again, that's glufosinate ammonium, they've not been studied from the perspective of developmental neurotoxicity. That means how the brain develops or does not develop. So early pesticide exposure, common sense would tell us this. Although this is still denied by the manufacturers of these products, it's crazy. Weaken the basic structure of the developing brain and cause permanent changes, leading to a wide range of lifelong effects in the studies on our health and our behavior. They are hormonal disruptors. They cause GI problems, immune dysfunction, inflammation, you name it, pesticides can cause it. The brain, for sure, is affected by pesticides. There's no doubt. And this GLA is just one of them. A study exposed mice to low doses of GLA, low doses during both pre- and postnatal periods. They looked at the development and behavioral changes of the offspring during infancy and adulthood. They did neurobehavioral tests, the whole battery of tests, looking at the effects of this GLA stuff to maternal exposure on reflex development and what they called, you know, pup communication in this study, and affiliative behaviors. And affiliative behaviors are any sort of behavior that is important for social interactions, you know, with others. And these behavioral alterations showed a striking resemblance to the exact sort of changes we see in animal models of autism spectrum disorders. Now, at the brain level, GLA maternal exposure caused some increase in brain weight of the offspring. In addition, it reduced the expression of genes that are involved in creating autism-like defects. They're known as PTEN and PEG3 genes. And they observe these changes in the brains of these pups in the study. So if it happened in the study animals, there's no guarantee it's going to happen in human beings, but you know, these are very similar nervous systems. So my bet is organic when you can. And then there's a very interesting chemical that can be measured in the blood plasma known as brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Trophic means growth. And a deficiency of this chemical has been linked to ASDs because it alters brain plasticity. Folks, brain plasticity simply means the ability of the brain to manage itself and to form itself. It is it has this plasticity, which also is observed in stroke victims, for example, when a person has a stroke and they seem to come back from it. Sometimes the area of the brain that was damaged during the stroke does not come back, but other areas of the brain can take over those lost areas of function, and that's called plasticity. And that is something that we all have, because if we didn't, we'd all be mentally defective at this point if brains couldn't repair all the time. And by the way, this is real important. Brain plasticity is, its potential is from birth to about age 23. And every neurologist knows this. Now, after age 23, of course we can influence the brain. Thank goodness for me and the rest of us. But my point here is nutritional approaches and medical approaches and physical approaches are best instituted as early as possible after birth and consistently, not some short-term use of these nutrients in that diet. That will get you nowhere fast. So I mentioned this minimal brain dysfunction, which really is another term applied to the ASDs in a sense, because they all are examples of brain dysfunctions. Many foods and nutritional supplements promote brain plasticity, which we now all understand we need to help reverse, stop, or affect in a positive way brain dysfunction. And all of you know some of these examples, like DHA from fish or fish oils or a flax oil, olive oil, vitamin E, resveratrol, reduced glutathione is another example, ginkgo, choline, real important for brain development throughout one's entire life. If you're seeing someone who's working with your child with an ASDA and they're not on choline, maybe you should consider leaving or at least asking them, why do you not have choline in the protocol? I cannot think of a reason not to, a single contraindication not to. It's needed to make acetylcholine, a very, very important neurotransmitter for brain connections. And there's GABA, which I've mentioned in other shows. There's certain species of edible mushrooms, B12 and folic acid, but not just any B12 and folic acid. It has to be activated, methylated. And I mentioned a gene called the MTHFR gene, which controls methylation. If you give non-methylated forms of nutrients to a child or an adult with ASDs and they cannot methylate, you're not going to help them. You're actually going to probably worsen them because they use up their own limited methylation capacity. If you give them methylated activated nutrients and, better yet, customized supplements, I prefer with children with ASD to make specific supplements for that child based on their chemistry, their symptoms, drugs that are used, whatever it is, so I can pick and choose the exact supplements, the right doses, and the right synergistic combinations. That is the best way. And you can put like 50 different nutrients together for a child in a capsule, or if your child cannot swallow a capsule, in a powder. Because I see a lot of patients come to me and they've got these poor little kids on 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 different supplements. Listen, even if the child can do that now, what are the chances of them being able to maintain that throughout their lives, which is what's needed? I would say very, very little. There's many other things other than nutrition, by the way, which can improve brain plasticity and therefore alter brain function and help reduce the minimal or moderate brain dysfunction that we see in ASDs, like practicing what's called a cross-crawl pattern exercises. We'll talk about that during another show. And another cause of ASDs might be, we're talking about potential causes of ASDs. And my blood detective integrated approach considers many aspects of these causes. They have to be thoroughly investigated. They can't just be skipped over. There's one called late moderate preterm infants. Now, or LMPTs, late moderate preterm infants. These are infants that are at increased risk for positive autistic screening tests. So preterm infants, preterm births are a problem, and that must be considered. And these children with ASDs, I can tell you, and research has shown, they have multiple vitamin and mineral deficiencies and macro nutritional deficiencies, which refer to proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. But not just deficiencies, imbalances, or the nutrient levels might be fine. This is really important, people. The nutritional levels might be fine, but they may require much, much more. And many of these nutrient levels, they're not even adequately checked. So you really must rely, the clinician must rely, the mother, the father, trying to see if these therapies are working, must rely on what they see, but over a long period of time. So what I do is a blood detective interpretive report on my patients. I do very, very thorough blood work, body composition, measuring their muscle, water, fat, because the dose of nutrients, the dose of foods must be based not merely on kilograms of body weight. You know, if you take the right thing at the wrong dose, it's not going to work. That is what I see 98% of the time. People doing many of the right things, but almost no one doing the more complex work they should do at the wrong doses. So I want to just end today's show by encouraging you to listen to the next show, part 3 of Autism Epidemic, and visit my website, listen to this again, send me your questions, and we're going to continue this conversation of causes and natural treatments and medical treatments for autism spectrum disorders. I'm Dr. Michael Wall, the blood detective. You can reach me at 914-242-8844 or go to blooddetective.com. Or intmedny.com. Thanks, Alex, and have a great day, everyone.